Are you an educator, an artist, a social worker, working for a nonprofit organization perhaps, maybe a journalist? We'll talk about why these middle-class professionals are struggling to make ends meet this hour, and why our guest says they may not exceed their parents when it comes to financial success, and might not even come close to having a similar lifestyle as their parents, and we'll wonder why. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, June the 4th. We will talk about the decline of the professional middle class with the author of Not Keeping Up With Our Parents. Nan Mooney is a journalist and an award-winning author, and she joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And you're not keeping up with your parents?
No, I'm not, and I am one of many.
Yeah, why?
Well, it really boils down to some fairly simple economic statistics. Wages for the professional middle class have basically stagnated over the past 5 to 10 years, and the fixed costs of everything have gone up. So we're paying more for health care, we're paying more for child care, we're paying more for college tuitions, we're paying more for housing. And so, you know, you do the math and you see that we're struggling financially.
Yeah. When I started my first job out of college, though, I was making at least half the amount of an entry-level job today.
Well, but like I said, the costs of everything have gone up. So they've gone up more than wages have gone up, and the economic statistics do support that.
Yeah. So who are the middle class, that the white-collar workers that you're writing about?
Well, I'm talking about all the people I interviewed, and I interviewed over 100 individuals, both single and in families, spread all across the country. They all had at least four-year college degrees. Many of them had master's degrees and PhDs on top of that. They worked in professions that oftentimes you got more moral prestige than financial reward. So things like working in the nonprofit sector, working in education, other social service jobs, maybe the lower ends of professions like law and medicine. So maybe they were legal aid attorneys or worked in clinics, environmental scientists, journalists, people in the arts. So a good healthy swath of the population.
Yeah. So give us an example of, maybe an individual who is college educated, working in a rewarding career, but struggling to make ends meet.
Well, say, you know, you're a university professor and you're making $50,000 a year and your spouse is a elementary school teacher making $30,000 a year and you're trying to raise three kids. Today, it sounds like it should be enough, $80,000 for a family of five. But today, because you both work full time, you have to put those kids in child care. You're having to afford a house, maybe in an urban environment, which is where your job is. You have to pay a portion of your health care because your job won't cover you or won't cover your whole family. So the costs begin to add up.
Yeah. But the career that was chosen for a reason. Somebody wanted to have a rewarding job in some sort of creative or service oriented sector. So don't you make up for that by having that rewarding career?
Some sacrifices, but it's not as if they've gone into a self-indulgent type of career that society doesn't need. I think, you know, it's very important that we have teachers, so I think that it needs to be a little more financially feasible for us to pursue those kinds of careers. And I'm not saying that you have to make as much as a hedge fund manager. there are going to be some disproportionate salaries, but if we could get back to a place where we have a little more economic equality in this country, the economic inequality between the very wealthy and the rest of the population is steeper now than it's been since the 1920s.
Yeah. But, you know, the example you used, too, I'm trying to think. So we have this family income of $80-some thousand. Not a millionaire by any means, but that's not enough to maintain a nice middle class life?
Fortunately, it isn't. It isn't anymore, and it's because we're having to pay out for so many things. And I think there's a big myth that it's really because everyone needs, you know, everyone in the family needs to have their cell phone, and we have five flat-screen TVs and three cars. But they've really shown that consumer spending since the 1970s hasn't increased. So it's not that we've become greedier or more materialistic, although perhaps we have, but that we're having to pay more for those fixed costs that I mentioned. So if you're overspending, say, on vacations or buying furniture for the house, you can say, okay, I'm going to cut back this month and we're not going to spend on that. We're going to put away a little money. But if what you're spending on is the child care bill or the mortgage bill, you just can't do that. You can't say, I'm not going to pay the mortgage this month.
Yeah, or I'm not going to pay the doctor bill.
Right.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about, I mean, it seems to me that that healthcare costs are one that's that have really gone through the roof.
Healthcare is a huge portion of it. And many more people who aren't covered by their employer the way they used to be, or if they are covered, they're not covered as much, so they're having to pay a larger amount towards their healthcare, whether that's paying the premiums or paying copays or co-insurance. So out of pocket, you know, bankruptcies, medical bankruptcies have gone up phenomenally. And a lot of these people who are shouldering these heavy costs actually do have health insurance, but it's all the additional payments they have to make if somebody gets really sick. So if there's any kind of health crisis, it can tip you right over the edge.
Yeah. And college tuition just in the past decade has jumped substantially, too.
Absolutely. Another huge one. And college students today, undergraduates are graduating with an average of $20,000 in debt. And if you go into graduate school, that goes up to $46,000. So that's a huge hole to start out in. And it's really difficult to climb your way out. And so people are still paying off those college loans in their, you know, into their 40s when they really want to be starting to save for college for their own children.
Yeah, we just heard recently that Barack Obama paid off his school loans, what, this year or last year?
Right, and there's a person who's doing quite well financially.
Yeah. And not to mention your own college debt, but putting your kid through school.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think a big choice that people are facing now is, do I save for my own retirement or do I save for my children's education? Because I simply don't see where the money is to do both. And that's an extremely difficult choice for people to be put in. You know, do I help myself or do I help my children?
Yeah. And my folks had pension plans and Social Security as a sure thing, and it's not so sure anymore.
Exactly. And my parents had the same thing. And now very small portion of jobs provide pensions. And what we have instead are the defined benefit plans like 401ks, which are essentially asking you to save for your own retirement in this tax-protected account. But again, we're talking to families who just don't have any money to even to pay for the things they want to spend on now, never mind saving for retirement, which might be happening, you know, 20, 30 years in the future.
Yeah. You know, I meant to ask you, too, are you talking, I'm tail end of the baby boom generation. Are you talking to me or are you talking to Gen X?
Well, the bulk of the people I interviewed were in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, mm-hmm. but I did talk to people in their 50s and 60s, and they certainly aren't immune from this, these issues, especially as we're seeing more, you know, outsourcing and job layoffs and things like that, so they're not being able to account on a steady salary, and they, too, are suffering from the increase, certainly the increase in health care costs and having to pay higher college tuitions for their kids. So all these issues, I think, strike us across the board, anyone who's in the workforce now.
Yeah.
And it's certainly not confined to an 18 to 34, you know, range. I think a lot of people think, oh, it's just these young kids today and they'll learn. But it's actually really, to a large degree, people who are in their later 30s and 40s as they, you know, they have kids, they have families, their expenses are mounting and their salaries have plateaued. And they're the ones who are really struggling with this, I think.
Yeah. And how big a deal is this, really? So what if I'm not as financially better, well off as my parents?
Well, I think it's a huge deal for several reasons. A big one is that a lot of us, in order to get by, we're doing two things. We're borrowing from our families, who maybe had some of those social safety nets that we don't have now, and we're going into a lot of debt, credit card debt, mortgage debt. So, you know, housing is a great example of that. Although more people have houses these days, they own far less, which means they don't have assets, they don't have equity that they're going to be able to cash in when they retire. So looking into the future, I think that we could get into a real extreme financial crunch because we're going to run out of that money we can borrow from our parents. And in fact, a lot of us are going to be in positions where we're going to have to help them financially. We're going to have these huge amounts of debt, and the money just isn't going to be available.
We're talking with Nan Mooney, author of Not Keeping Up With Our Parents, The Decline of the Professional Middle Class, talking about why there are so many white-collar, college-educated workers today that are struggling with financial matters, economic security. We'll talk more about why this is and what can be done about it in just a moment. And we want to know if you are in this professional middle class and what it's like for you and whether it matters all that much to you that you're not keeping up with your parents. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. More on presidential politics and the race for the White House coming up later today. Kathleen Dunn and her guests will discuss the end of the primary calendar in her 9 o'clock hour. More on Talk of the Nation after 1 this afternoon. And I'm sure Ben Marins will also be talking about it during At Issue after 4. So you can get plenty in your political fix today on the Ideas Network. Right now, we're talking with Nan Mooney. She's author of the new book, Not Keeping Up With Our Parents, The Decline of the Professional Middle Class. And we welcome your thoughts and questions for her. First, we go to Colleen in Neenah. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call. I would like to just talk about the philosophy of the world, the work world today, and what I'm an educator and a nurse, and I have a great chance to observe young adults and some middle-aged adults, and I'm kind of like the end of the baby boomers, too, or the far end of the baby boomers. But what I see is, first of all, I when I'm with my young students, I notice that putting food into food machines rather than packing your own lunch takes up much of their money. Many of them have a child and are single parents. Many of them refuse to work certain hours and certain jobs, which is okay. It's okay. It's a philosophy that they may have. I can't say that it's terribly wrong.
You're talking about working in the medical profession, Colleen?
Well, or most any job. They won't, you know, it needs to fit their style, which some, by virtue of terrible necessity, have to work any job. The other thing is, most of them, I've only had two students who don't carry a cell phone. Most of them only want to be emailed. They're difficult to contact unless you have a computer that's way up to date.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I was outside of Willie Street Co-op several weeks ago, and I heard a conversation that I found incredibly interesting. And two people said, "Oh, hi, how are you? What are you doing now?" And one of the woman, who was about in her mid-30s, said, "I just took a job, a full-time job." She said, "I have to work 8 freaking hours a day." And I wanted to say, guess what? I've worked 8 hours a day for 40 years. But I didn't, because that was my way of working.
Yeah, all right.
Life today is incredibly expensive.
I'm sorry. Thank you very much, Colleen, for all those examples. Nan Mooney, it sounds like she's thinking kids today don't have that work ethic and they feel entitled.
Well, you know, and I hear that a lot. And again, I won't say that that doesn't exist, but I'll go back to the statistics I was talking about earlier, that actually consumer spending has not gone up since the 70s. So it may look like we're spending more because, say, we're spending more on electronics. We have more electronics, but electronics are cheaper. So we're not spending more on them. And things like computers and cell phones, I think it can be argued, are necessities, certainly if you are a single parent. And again, if you're a single parent, of course you're going to pick and choose about the hours that you can work, because you have to make sure somebody's watching your children, even if you're in a dual-income family and you're both working. So we have to make choices. But there's an interesting point that she brings up, too, that part of being in the middle class and having gotten that education is that you hopefully do have a little bit more liberty in terms of choosing what kind of work you want to do, that you don't have to just go to any kind of job. You've been trained for something special and something that you're interested in, care about, and nursing would be a great example of that, or teaching.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't preclude the fact that those professions have become incredibly difficult to make a living at.
Yeah, indeed, some of those issues that Colleen discussed, you think there ought to be public policy changes that that make it easier for people struggling with all this?
Absolutely. If families could get some help with childcare, if there were more generous parental leave policies, then maybe it wouldn't be such a big deal for a parent to have to go back to work.
Yeah.
And, you know, to figure out how to cover all those different expenses.
Yeah,
if we could have more help with our health insurance, those kinds of things.
Yeah. Well, specifically, don't we already have parental leave policies?
We have a very meager one. It's the worst one in the industrialized world, frankly. Mm-hmm. We right now we have what's called the Family and Medical Leave Act. It means that people get 12 weeks of unpaid leave if they work for an employer that has more than 50 employees. So that cuts a lot of people out already. And 12 weeks isn't necessarily a lot if there are any sort of complications with the pregnancy, with the child's health, with you know, having to line up child care. And to go 12 weeks with no income, it's very hard for some families.
Yeah.
So I think that we could do better.
So in terms of child care, do you want taxpayers to subsidize child care for people?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I do. And that happens in most industrialized countries.
Yeah. And what about the argument, though, that, hey, I'm a senior and I've already raised my kids and or, you know, I don't have kids. Why should I help you raise yours?
Well, I think it's part of being part of a society is that you help people who are in different places and different positions of you. If you have the means to help people who are raising kids. I mean, those kids aren't just important to their parents. They're important to the society. They're the future. They're the people who are going to be out there maybe working, educating your own children or your own grandchildren at some point. So you want to not just help yourself. I think there can be a disproportionate emphasis on individualism in this country. And I think we need to look a little bit more at how do we help the whole society be healthier.
Yeah, and when Grandpa says, I didn't have you know, anybody paying for my child care, you say?
Well, but Grandpa probably had help with his pension. He had help with his health care. He had help maybe with an FHA housing loan. So it's not as if he didn't get any help.
Yeah. Back to the phones. Jenny in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hello.
So, I want to point out that it's starting already when you get out of college. You might be a professional, but you have, like, my fiance's got $10,000 of debt already, and he didn't even finish.
Oh, boy.
I work at a Target, but I should be making, like, $12 an hour, but no, I work in the photo lab. That's not $12 an hour, let me tell you. And they just, it's, how are you supposed to get ahead? If it weren't for my parents helping us out, I wouldn't even have gotten out. I would have loans as well. And I have an apartment and that's it. I have an apartment and a cat. I can't even afford cable.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you can't even start out with having a clean slate in this society if you want to be a professional. And like I show apartments and I work. So I'm working like 60 hours a week and I'm, you know, people say that us kids don't have a work ethic. Well, some of us do. The rest of us maybe don't. And what happens is I interviewed a guy for an apartment, and he's like, I said, yeah, I don't look like it, but I'm an archaeologist. He's like, yeah, I work at Pick and Save, but I'm really a paramedic. I mean, it's just you can't necessarily get what you're supposed to be getting an hour. You just don't graduate and get a job.
Nan Mooney?
Yeah, so he brings up some very valid points that the job market is very tight now, and especially given the economic downturn we seem to be slipping into. And when you come out of college with those loans, you need to start paying them off within 6 months. So it's not as if you have a lot of time to sort of experiment, figure out what you want to do, and look for those jobs that are getting increasingly difficult to look for. You know, and right away you're going to have to find something to do with healthcare. You're going to have to get some sort of living situation. So there are immediate pressures, and they're very, you know, there's a lot of pressure right away for people. And carrying all that debt, they don't necessarily have the freedom to establish themselves. And I think that that's another thing that's changed.
Yeah, and it's hearing from people like Jenny working multiple jobs, not spending a lot on their living expenses. And here are, you know, educated people who are, you know, they're, I don't mean to sound, how do I put this? They're living working class or lower income lifestyles.
Absolutely. And we're seeing that the middle class is dealing with a lot of the issues that we typically attach to the lower income families, like not being able to afford health care or not being able to afford housing or not being able to afford child care. So these are not new issues, but they're slowly climbing up the income ladder, and we're not so slowly climbing up and claiming more and more people.
Yeah. Thank you, Jenny. Good luck to you. Dan in Madison is next. Hi, you're on the air.
Morning. I'm really torn. On one hand, I went to college for economics, and then I went, when I couldn't find a job that really fit well, I went on to law school. So I have the loans, and, you know, I have lots of colleagues of mine who took jobs in the private sector that pay a lot more than my public sector job. At the same time, I got to say, my quality of life is probably every bit as good, if not better. Maybe my material living standard isn't that great. And as an economist, I got to say, it's kind of absurd to say that material living standards haven't risen since the 1970s. That really subtracts from the strength of your arguments. When you look at the size of cars and you look at the size of houses, you look at all the increasing frequency with which we replace clothes and, you know, household goods. On the other hand, as an economist, I also have to say it makes sense when you're selecting what education and training path you want to go down.
Mm-hmm.
What your quality of life and material living standard trade-off is going to be. You know, if making money is my goal, then I should select education, training, and occupations where there's either short supply or very high demand.
Yeah, Nan Mooney, it's a choice of your own making there?
To a degree, yes, and I want to quickly correct that. I didn't say the material standard of living has not risen, but that consumer spending, the amount of consumer spending has not risen since the 1970s. But I think he brings up an important point that we're all going to have to go in and sort of adjust our expectations about the kind of lives we can live. And even though we think of being middle class as being able to afford a house of our own and being able to afford a vacation every year and things like that, maybe that is not the middle class standard of living right now. And until things get better economically for us, one of the things we're going to do to make ourselves sane is to adjust that standard and realize we're going to have to make compromises we didn't expect to make and to look for quality of life in things other than money. I think there's a lot of dangerous rhetoric in this country that you are what you make. And the more money you make, the better you are. And it's easy to buy into that with all the, you know, advertising and people that we see around us with a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, what about his point, though, that his quality of life is better than his parents, though maybe he's not making as much money?
Well, I congratulate him for that. I think a lot of people don't feel that to be true, that they felt like growing up in middle-class families and often even working-class families, that they aren't able to achieve the same quality of life that their parents can. A lot of people I spoke to, that their parents had raised the kids on one middle-class family, and one middle-class income, and they're struggling on dual income, and that they, you know, they lived in families that had their own house, that were able to take vacations, that were able to raise four kids, and they're struggling to raise one or two, so that they really do feel like things are tighter and they're having to make choices that their parents didn't necessarily have to make.
We go now to Martha in Sauk City. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. I think, at least with the young people that I know, they charge things that we didn't charge. They use charge cards like a loan. They aren't satisfied with the older cars that they maybe can get for less money, maybe even pay cash. They don't want starter homes, what we considered starter homes. They want the 3-4-bedroom homes that are expensive. They're really not satisfied. And I think if you look back to a lot of these parents, when they were 30 years old, they didn't have this great standard of living. They do now after working many, many years. And I'm not, you know, I know a lot of young people that work very, very hard. They work many hours. But that's the way society is right now, and that's the way the economy is right now. And if you can't afford cable, don't have cable. If you can't afford the Internet, don't have the Internet. If you can't afford a cell phone, don't have a cell phone. But don't charge everything. And I think that's creating a problem for people. I don't think they have to have the huge charge card debt.
Yeah.
I'll take my response off the air. Thank you.
Thank you. Nan?
I think credit card debt is an important area to look at. And unfortunately, many people are getting into a huge amount of credit card debt, and it's happening early. They're getting those first credit cards in college. But unfortunately, a lot of what they're charging are not things, they're not luxury items. They aren't last-minute vacations and clothing splurges. they are things like medical expenses, like groceries and the paychecks don't stretch, and things that they need to buy and don't have the money for. And so they're using those credit cards to bridge gaps that they couldn't bridge otherwise. So on the one hand, credit can be really dangerous because it's easy to forget that at some point we're still going to have to pay for this, that it's not just, you know, it's a loan with a great deal of interest. But at the same time, I think a lot of families would really be struggling and be in a serious hole if not for credit cards to bridge the debt. Yeah. So I think they feel like, you know, that credit cards are really a double-edged sword, that we need them, yet they're getting us in a lot of trouble.
And then generally she was saying that, you know, when our parents, for example, were in their 30s, they weren't necessarily living high on the hog either. And so when you're in your 30s, you're not going to be at the pinnacle of your career and earning potential.
Well, but I didn't just talk to people who were still climbing up the career ladder. There's people whose salaries had really plateaued who were still struggling for these issues. So I don't think it's just a degree of being patient and the money will come and you'll be able, and they're not succeeding in saving anyway. Our personal savings have dropped 40% in the last decade, and very few families have that recommended 3 months salary set aside that they can live on should anything happen, should they lose a job or have a medical crisis. So I don't think it's just a degree of, you know, saying be patient, the money will come, and then you'll be able to afford these things.
Thank you, Martha. Alan in Milwaukee is with us now. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I have a comment and a question. The first, the comment is that as a corporate planner in Milwaukee, I work with major corporations on facilities over the last 25 years. And as an example, there was a large standalone brokerage company here in Milwaukee that the salary started at about $35,000 for the mail clerk and went on up to, you know, millions. There were about 450 people that worked there. That company was bought out by Kemper Insurance, and they replaced that space and jobs with jobs that paid about $25,000. You know, my son is 25. He is having a hard time in the market. He's got $20,000 in debt. The jobs that used to be out there aren't there. Jobs that could cover the, you know, the basic expenses of health care, and the cost of transportation has just escalated incredibly. To get into our transportation system, you got to be able to spend $15,000 on a safe, decent car. That's not a transportation system. That's a kind of exploitation of people for basics. So I wonder if your book talks about that issue, about how we're exploited by our corporate framework. The other question has to do with credit cards. I am disabled now. I had to run up credit cards till Social Security came through for me. I have huge debt. And does your book talk about how to deal with credit card payment companies and bankruptcy and things like that? How to solve some of these problems?
Well, not so much, but Nan Mooney?
It's not a financial mm-hmm. advice book or a financial planning book. So I don't give necessarily detailed advice how to solve problems like that. But I do have a lot of suggestions on how we can tackle these issues, both in a broader sense in this country and on an individual level. You know, in a broader sense, I think we really need to push for some of these social safety nets that in a lot of the aspects we used to have in this country. We did used to have more help with our health insurance, so individuals weren't going into huge amounts of debt to pay for their own medical expenses. We talked about having pension plans that helped out more with retirements instead of people just paying for their own. And I think we need to get back to a place where we have I'm not talking about the government paying for everything, but where we have more help than we have now. Because, as he mentioned, the salaries are just start low and stay low, and people simply, as individuals, are not making enough to cover all these expenses by themselves.
Yeah. He wanted to hear your thoughts on whether corporations were exploiting us or are the top 1% taking advantage of the rest of us.
I think they are. I think that, again, we talked about that income inequality and that you know, people who are doing well are doing extremely well and the rest of people are struggling, and salaries are kept low. There's not a lot of corporate loyalty these days, so it's difficult to have confidence that even once we get a job, we're going to be able to keep that job. We don't get as much help with our health insurance as we used to from our employers. We don't get as much help with our retirement. It's often difficult to arrange work hours that are conducive to raising a family. So in all those areas, corporations could do a lot more to help out the individual than they are now.
Yeah. You know, they weren't white-collar jobs necessarily, but very, very high-paying blue-collar jobs at the General Motors plant in Janesville, in Wisconsin, and other plants around the country. Devastating news to all of those people yesterday when GM decided to close up shop. A lot of people are going to be looking for work in southern Wisconsin.
Absolutely, and we're seeing the loss of a lot of once union-protected jobs, and those are not just the blue-collar jobs, but the white-collar jobs as well, and it is devastating to families. They simply don't have any wiggle room that they can absorb a blow like that, and I think you'll see a lot of bankruptcies and a lot of families getting into serious, serious trouble that they're not going to be able to get it out of.
Nan Mooney, our guest, author of Not Keeping Up With Our Parents, The Decline of the Professional Middle Class. Are you keeping up with your parents financially? There are many college-educated, white-collar workers like educators, journalists, social workers, and others who are struggling to maintain a middle-class lifestyle because of higher costs these days, higher tuition, higher health care costs, higher living costs, lower wages. What can be done about what she calls the decline of the professional middle class? We'll welcome more of your thoughts and questions in just a moment. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email, talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 5 months and more than 35 million votes later, the Democratic primary calendar has come to a close. In our next hour, after 9 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn and her guests will analyze the historic and record-breaking vote coming up after 9. Our guest, Nan Mooney, author of the new book, Not Keeping Up With Our Parents, The Decline of the Professional Middle Class. In the book, Nan, you call for a boost in health care, child care, and other help. What would it take to make these things happen?
Well, I think we're at a pivotal time right now. We're in an election year where there's a lot of focus on economic issues, and it's a prime time for us to really press for the kind of issues that we feel are important. So to really let the politicians know that health care reform is incredibly important to us, and that help with college tuition and other economic issues so that we're able to make it a little more than we're able to make it now, and to look at, I'm a big fan of more progressive taxation, which means taxing the wealthy a little more heavily. And if we look at our history in this country, the times when the economic inequality has been less have been the times when the progressive taxation has been higher. And so we just equal things out a little bit more. And, that's the way that we pay for these social benefits for the rest of the country.
Our next caller is Brian in Toma. Hi, Brian.
Good morning, Joy.
Good morning.
You have me so riled up by this conversation. I'm so surprised that so many callers are calling in and are dubious to the fact that the middle class is hurting and dying. I'm a professional doing engineering for the last almost 30 years of my life. I work with a lot of professional people. I do not see the young people as trying to cheat their way through it. They're working hard. The fact is, my insurance alone went up 27% last year, in 1 year. So the costs are considerably more difficult to adjust to. You can't just simply adjust your hourly rate to make those things fit. It is America. If you go to Europe, you find that America is much more of a humanitarian state than America. We are in trouble. And it's a fact that statistically, this is what your guest is telling us is true, and she's not the first one to preach it. I'm so surprised that so many people think it's not occurring.
Yeah, Brian, I'm sorry, I misunderstood. Did you say who is more humanitarian than America?
Europe. I travel to Europe often, and it's so obvious to me that America is lagging. Our towns, our small towns, are dying, and we're doing nothing about it. The fact is our middle class is dying, and it's dying from the rural to the large cities. But it just seems to be going unnoticed. We all think that, no, we're richer than we really think we are.
Yeah. Nan Mooney?
Well, I think he actually brings up a great example that there are a lot of other countries that are very healthy economically that have models for healthcare systems, childcare systems, college tuition systems that we can, if we don't adopt full scale, can at least borrow from in order to help our citizens more? Because I think he's absolutely right. We do, Americans do, we're working very hard. I don't think it's a question of us being lazy or of us being greedy. It's a question of us having to pay so much for all these different aspects. If it was just one thing, you know, if it was just housing that could had gone up, we could probably afford it. But the fact that we're having to pay out so much more in all these different areas and our wages have not adjusted accordingly, that we need help.
Yeah. And what sorts of lessons do you think we should take from Europe?
Well, France, for example, has a phenomenal healthcare system. They also have a phenomenal childcare system where there's government-subsidized childcare for children beginning at 3 months old and right up through nursery school, high-quality care where all the caregivers are professionals with degrees in child education, and so that people have help in getting care for their children, help that they can trust, and that doesn't become this huge cut out of their budget. You know, I spoke to people who had gone back to work, mothers who've gone back to work and were actually having to pay out more in the equivalent of or even more in child care than they were earning. And yeah, that's untenable. There's no way to make it when we have systems like that in place.
And, heck, I don't live there. I loved visiting there. But I hear critics, conservatives, usually Republicans, saying the economies in Europe are horrible.
Again, I'm not an expert, so I can't speak to in detail on the European economies. But these are not countries that are going bankrupt. I mean, we just look at them. They are operating.
I guess the point
and again,
being,
we don't need to adopt their systems full scale, but
right,
we can certainly borrow from them to look at ways when we can help our citizens more.
We can't afford these things.
And our economy isn't in such hot shape right now either. So,
yeah, I guess the point I was getting at is whether this country could afford the public policy changes that you're asking for.
Well, actually, a lot of these countries are spending less, a smaller percentage of their gross domestic product on health care than the United States is. So not only could we adopt some of these things, but it may be cheaper for us to do that.
Yeah. Kent in Heartland is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, or good morning, I guess.
Good morning, yes.
It's very interesting for me because from a different perspective, I'm a small business owner, and I've tried to make with employees and had to go through a lot of the same hard decisions that that people face with running a business. But the medical costs clearly is our number one problem, and as a result, we keep on contributing more to our key employees. But the problem is when we try to bring in an entry level person, like in a production area, the medical cost to give them the same benefits that we would give to someone that just would be an office person, it's just price prohibitive, and it ends up being a half of their wage. And if we do that, we basically can't make it. So it's been we certainly, especially in Wisconsin, we've found that the government really needs to help small business, so we can provide more jobs, and that's really the barrier to entry. So that a lot of our stuff gets moved out of state or offshore or wherever, because we just basically cannot, you know, even we'd never be at minimum wage, but at even at a decent production wage for someone, the medical cost basically makes it almost impossible for us to make it. So that would be the number one thing.
Oh yeah. So Nanui, those healthcare costs are hurting small businesses and providing jobs.
Absolutely, and that's why he spoke to that very eloquently, that it's not just the individuals but the small businesses out there that need help from the government. And a lot of these businesses are competing on the global economy with businesses that are getting help from their own governments. So in that sense, it's going to behoove our economy to help out with healthcare, because we're going to give our small businesses and medium-sized businesses and even large businesses a boost that they need to compete on the global level.
Yeah. Lisa in Eau Claire, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say that, you know, I do agree that the cost of health care is extremely high, but I do work with people trying to help them consolidate debt or restructure their debt, and I can't totally agree that people aren't somewhat responsible for the positions that they're in. That, you know, the media is constantly talking about the rising health care costs, and I just don't see people plan at all or want to take responsibility when they create debt for themselves. I see 30-year-olds take out loans for cosmetic surgery at 24% interest. and then they consolidate it on their homes, and they forget how they spent that money, but they're always professing, well, I'll just claim bankruptcy.
Yeah. Well, that's a dumb idea, Nan Mooney.
Yes, absolutely. And I will certainly am not going to say that financial irresponsibility does not play a role, and the example she gave is clearly one that was a stupid decision. But it's a combination, and I think we have to look at both. We have to look at the societal factors and the individual factors. So on an individual level, we really do need to make a point to make responsible financial decisions now and accept that money is extremely tight and we don't have the liberty to make foolish choices. And that's going to start from the second we get out of college. But at the same time, in addition to doing that, we are going to need some help from the government and from our employers to help us make ends meet. So we need changes on both sides.
Nan Mooney, our guest, author of the book Not Keeping Up With Our Parents, The Decline of the Professional Middle Class. Still time for you if you have a question or thought about why so many white-collar, college-educated workers these days are struggling to make ends meet and are not keeping up with their parents. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. Nancy in Grafton is next. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just don't know why everybody thinks they have to go to college. Why can't schools, when you're 16 years old, if you don't think you want to be going on to college, why can't you learn a good trade? Up in Canada, right now, in the oil sands, they're looking for help. They can't get help. It's $1,200 to $2,500 a day if you're a good welder or a good heavy equipment operator.
Did you say $1,200 to $2,500 a day?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You work 12-hour days, but they put you up in big barracks, and you are fed.
But you're somewhere in the hinterlands in Canada?
Yeah, but if you work there 120 days or so, you can come on back, and you can buy something that you need, that you've worked for.
Yeah.
And another thing is, I teach the trades. We're going to need those things. And in the Madison area somewhere, they had, for 60 years, they were teaching agriculture.
Right, I know
that. Now they decided, no, they're not going to do that anymore. They don't need that. Well, we are going to need people who know how to grow crops and grow food.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'll bet you any money that they still are funding their football teams, their basketball teams.
Okay, you're getting us a little bit off topic here, Nancy. But what about Nan Mooney trades and those jobs? Are we overlooking those?
Well, to a degree, and certainly in the example she used is a trade job that you earn good money, although it would be difficult for most families to take on that kind of a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
But what we call the college wage premium, which is how much more money you're going to make if you get a college degree as opposed to a high school degree, is actually quite high now. So you are going to be better off if you go to college than if you graduate with a high school degree or even get an associate's degree, a vocational degree. So,
and your point, too, is that that college degree is not a guarantee that you're going to be in a very comfortable middle-class wage.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So you'll be better off if you go to college than if you just stop at high school, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you'll be financially comfortable by any means. And for a long time, it did mean that. And there's a lot of rhetoric in this country that you go to college, you get those job skills, and you'll be okay. And we're finding that that's actually not true.
Yeah. An email from Rick in Superior saying, one big difference between our generation and our parents is that our parents were more likely to have grown up with a farming or rural background and had skills that made them more likely to fix their own cars and clean their own houses and maintain their own yards, etc., etc. They also didn't play $100 plus on the internet, cable, and phone, and they didn't buy $3 coffees at Starbucks. How does that play into this?
Well, I think again, that goes to the, I don't know if we're more likely to pay someone to care for our yards now or not, mm-hmm. but the idea that people, that the problem is with individual consumers and that they're just greedy and they want too much stuff. But, you know, again, to take electronics because it's a good example, we may have more TVs in our house, but actually we can buy 3 TVs now for the price that you bought one for in the 1970s. So we're not spending more in those areas. And things like the internet are not luxuries anymore. They're, especially if you do any work from home, they're necessities. So people are spending their money differently, but they're not necessarily getting into a hole because they're getting greedy. They're getting into a hole because they're having to spend more on what I consider pretty essential items, like their mortgage and their child care bill and their health care, and they're having to pay more towards those items than they did in the 50s and 60s and 70s.
Yeah. So, Nan Mooney, last night we heard Barack Obama claim victory in the Democratic presidential nomination. Andy also said, when we have universal health care in this country, you can thank Hillary Clinton and all of the work that she has done on this issue. I'm wondering if you have high hopes that you will see some of the changes like help in health care costs coming in the coming years.
I do have high hopes, and because it's just too depressing to think any other way. Of course, it's much easier to say that you're going to do something than to actually do it as a politician. But I think that the economy has become such a crucial issue in this election, and that people are, you know, they're being asked to cut, and there just simply isn't room to cut anymore, that we are going to see changes, and that we are, in order to have a healthy and thriving economy, we're going to have to give people more help with health care. And they become crucial issues. And so I'm optimistic that we are going to see some kind of change.
Yeah. So, Nan Mooney, I mentioned that you're a journalist, one of the category of people that you're looking at here. You're 38. You're kind of in this age group. Did you just find yourself struggling to make ends meet? And that's what spurred you in writing this book?
It was, and it was not only me, but it was everybody I knew, people who were in a lot of those fields I talked about, working in nonprofits, working in social service, education-type jobs. And these were people who worked very, very hard, who were well-educated, who didn't spend foolishly. And so I felt like, you know, it's something more than just individuals making irresponsible financial decisions that's causing all this financial angst. There's got to be something bigger going on. And so I sort of went out and interviewed people and looked at the statistics and wanted to find evidence that it was more of a sociological phenomenon. And that evidence was there. We're strapped and struggling.
Yeah, but you don't think that this decline of the professional middle class that we are experiencing right now is permanent?
I hope it's not permanent. I hope that the pendulum has swung to that side and starting to swing back again. I do feel like there's a much more awareness of these issues and that more and more people in this country are in trouble and that we're going to have to do something for them. So hopefully that awareness leads to change.
Well, we want to thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Joy.
Yeah. Nan Mooney is a journalist and author of the new book, Not Keeping Up With Our Parents, The Decline of the Professional Middle Class. She is also the author of a previous book, the award-winning I Can't Believe She Did That, Why Women Betray Other Women at Work. Thanks to Carmen Jackson, Rob Ferret, and Cynthia Schuster for producing this hour. Thank you for listening and for calling in. I hope you are with us tomorrow at this time. We'll be talking with Richard Clark and about his new book, Your Government Failed You. So we hope you join us for that. If you'd like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows, you can call the radio store, 1-800-747-7444. Or you can listen to our talk shows archived on our website, WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.